You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast episode 557.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Hey, how are you, Kevin?
I'm good, and this is Memorial Show Part 2, which means also let's say hello to the mayor of Chicken Town.
Hello, I'm here again.
Back for more memorializing. We like to have you here for the memorial shows because you know things about people. So we're going to get to that very soon. Cornflake, do you have a National Whatever Day for us?
Quick one I figured you'd appreciate. Turning 55 on January 9th is Joey Lauren Adams.
Oh, Joey Lauren Adams. Sure, I know her.
Star of Chasing Amy and actually a whole bunch of other things I didn't know about.
Yeah, Chasing Amy was the big one for Joey, especially as part of the View Askewniverse working on the Kevin Smith movies. And she had smaller parts in a few of his other movies. Mallrats was her debut in the View Askewniverse.
Yeah, she gets to be perved on in the in the dressing room.
Oh, right, the boob scene, that's right. But then, yeah, she was so fantastic in Chasing Amy, though, when she got to star in.
And then there was Dazed and Confused, which I didn't know she was involved with.
Yeah, well, that was pre-Mallrats.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dazed and Confused was 93. Mallrats was after that, 95.
And Kevin is a big fan of Dazed and Confused.
Oh, sure. I know Joey from Dazed and Confused. Everybody in Mallrats came out of Dazed and Confused, essentially. Several people did. At least Ben Affleck, you know, was also in Dazed and Confused. And even Jason Lee was not in Dazed and Confused, but he was hanging around while they filmed Dazed and Confused.
Was he friends with the Ribisis?
Yeah, I think he was seeing Marissa Ribisi, I think. Yeah, the redhead girl in Dazed and Confused. Apparently, they were an item at the time, so he was around. So, but anyway, yeah, Joey went on to do a bunch of stuff after that. I met Joey once a few years back. Very cool lady. And yeah, very important part of the world of Kevin Smith movies, which we are certainly fans of.
Yes, we are.
So happy birthday, Joey, who happily is alive and well, unlike everybody else we're talking about today for part two of our memorial show. So we started this last week was part one. We went through the first half of 2022, reflecting on people from pop culture who we lost last year. Going to wrap it up today, moving as quickly as we can. These shows used to be super crazy long, and we've tried to tighten them up a bit. I've gotten a little more strict about who makes the cut.
Yeah.
But we do have a bunch of people to discuss. If we miss anybody, either last week or this week, please let us know. If there's someone that you are a fan of that we lost that you're hoping we would discuss, feel free to discuss them with us. In many cases, it's not that we missed it and it's not that we didn't like them. Sometimes it's just for time, or sometimes it's just, oh yeah, they were fine, but we just don't have much to say about them. You know, so sometimes I'll just scratch a name off the list if we just don't feel like we have much to add to the conversation. But we got a bunch to get through as we go. We shall take a shot, drink a shot in their honor. Whenever we hit somebody that we met in person, or even if we just saw them live in person once, we will make a note of that and have a drink in their honor accordingly. Does everybody have beverages?
Yes. I have an old fashioned.
Old fashioned, one of your favorite mixed beverages. Sure, I like those.
Yes. Yeah, it's my favorite kind of old man drink.
Yeah, it's an old man drink, and you love it.
Yeah.
You've got the old fashioned. Cornflake, what you got?
And I have a new fashioned.
New fashioned. What does that mean?
There's a brand of drinks called Two Chicks, and they make a flavor called New Fashioned.
Oh, yeah. You recommended that to me once.
Highly. It's orange and ginger and bubbles. and booze.
Haven't tried it yet, but that sounds delightful. I've got my coffee. I've got my store brand Diet Cola, just like last week. And my third beverage is, I've got that drink that Panda invented for me. We got a Christmas card from our friend Panda, former guest of the Flopcast, and Panda just wrote out a drink recipe on her Christmas card for us. She called it the Kevin Cocktail.
Because Panda knows what we all really want.
Yeah, for Christmas. So I've got the Kevin Cocktail courtesy of Panda. So multiple beverages lined up for all of us to enjoy tonight as we go. And let's jump into July 2022, starting with James Caan was 82. Probably best known from The Godfather.
Yeah.
Did a bunch of other... I think I know him best from Misery, the Stephen King movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I never saw that.
That was Kathy Bates had James Caan trapped in the bed. And he was really good in that. I never got way into Godfather. Like, I saw the Godfather movies once a million years ago, and it didn't make a big impact on me.
I think the first Godfather film is pretty much a perfect movie.
I should give it a chance again sometime.
I do like it quite a lot.
We'll check out James Caan, see what he's like when he's not... trapped in a bed by Kathy Bates. Larry Storch was 99.
Oh, he was one of the original live-action Ghostbusters for Filmation TV.
Yes, the Ghostbusters Filmation series of the 70s, way before the Bill Murray-type Ghostbusters. Larry Storch was your original Ghostbuster, probably best known from F Troop, which was back in the 60s, I think.
Yeah.
Sitcom with Ken Berry. And Forrest Tucker. Forrest Tucker, also part of the Ghostbusters, along with Larry Storch. He did a million movies and TV shows and things. I mean, he was 99. You know, the guy worked forever. And he did a ton of cartoon voices on Tennessee Tuxedo. He was the inventor that they would visit in every episode. Phineas J. Whoopi. Uh-huh. That was Larry Storch.
Oh, cool.
He was Drac on the Groovy Ghoulies.
Not the Drac Pack.
Not on the Drac Pack, but Groovy Ghoulies. Tons of stuff like that. When Scooby-Doo teamed up with Batman and Robin back in the early 70s, yeah. He was the Joker.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I can see that.
Yes, did a ton of goofy stuff like that over the years. Very funny guy. And take a drink for Larry Storch. I never met Larry, but I saw him in person at conventions several times. He was a regular on the convention scene for many years. And he would suit up. He would be sitting there in his F Troop costume.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say he had his Ghostbusters.
Yeah, he wasn't a Ghostbuster. He should have put on the gorilla suit from the Ghostbusters. But he'd be in his F Troop suit, like with a hat. He'd wear a hat with an arrow through it.
Well, if you ask me, the fact that he was not dressed as a gorilla was a missed opportunity.
He could have gone full gorilla. We all would have supported him. That was Larry Storch. Another big one for us. Was Paul Coker Jr. Another drink for Paul Coker Jr., who was 93. I was honored to meet Paul Coker several years back. They had a Mad Magazine artist reunion at a Boston Comic Con.
Oh, how nice.
Al Feldstein was there, and Al Jaffe, and Paul Coker. And what a thrill to see those three guys, because Paul Coker drew for Mad Magazine for decades, and probably even better known for our purposes from all the Rankin-Bass cartoons. He was the principal designer of Rankin-Bass shows for many years. Yeah, I think his earliest Rankin-Bass credit was Cricket on the Hearth, and then Frosty, which especially that's when you really see the Paul Coker style.
Yeah.
And a ton of Rankin-Bass shows. That's why they all have that look. That's Paul Coker's design. And you can even tell if you look at his Mad Magazine art, you can see the resemblance to the Rankin-Bass shows. But yeah, both the cell animation stuff like Frosty and the stop motion stuff, Santa Claus is Coming to Town and Peter Cottontail, Year Without a Santa Claus, you know, Rudolph Shiny New Year. Easter Bunny's Coming to Town. Nester.
I'll just say all of them.
All of them. Jack Frost. We were just talking about Jack Frost last week.
Yes.
Right up through the later stuff like Pinocchio and Leprechaun's Christmas Gold. And yeah, what a treat to meet the guy back. I guess that was about 10 years ago, I think. He had a prints at his autograph table of Frosty. It was like these nice like full color cardstock prints of Frosty. And he autographed one for me, and I'm getting out my wallet like, wow, that's great. How much are they? And he was like, what? Oh, no, no. Here you go. These are free.
Wow.
Oh, and I was like, Paul Coker, I don't think you understand how appearing at a comic book convention works. Super nice guy. And one of my very favorite artists from Madden. Of course, it's no secret around here how we feel about the Rankin-Bass cartoons and the great Paul Coker Jr. Moving along, Bob Rafelson was 89. Bob Rafelson created the Monkees.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's not a name that sprang to mind.
Yeah, when you think about the Monkees, you don't think of who might have had the idea to bring them together.
And contrary to popular belief, the Monkees were not created as a response to the Beatles and Hard Day's Night and such. Mm-hmm. Bob Rafelson had this idea for a show about a band before Hard Day's Night came out.
Okay.
And he was buddies with Jack Nicholson,
yes,
which is how Jack Nicholson got involved in Head, mm-hmm, in the Monkees movie Head. You know, Jack was a writer on, and then Bob and Jack went on to work on Easy Rider and Five Easy Pieces. So he was created the Monkees and then went on to all those cool kind of countercultural, mm-hmm, key movies of the early 70s.
It's pretty cool.
That was Bob Rafelson. And we are certainly Monkees fans around here, so thank you, Bob, for the Monkees. David Warner was 80, a British actor, appeared in The Omen.
Time Bandits.
Time Bandits, right? He was evil in Time Bandits. He did the George C. Scott version of Christmas Carol. He was Bob Cratchit in that 1980s Christmas Carol. And the big credit for us, though, was Tron.
The big credit for you.
You're right.
The most important credit in the history of everything was David Warner in Tron. He was kind of the big bad guy in Tron.
Yes.
Right? The Master Control Program, MCP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's Time Bandits for me is what I know him best from.
Well, the correct answer is Tron.
Okay.
That's David Warner. Paul Sorvino was 83. And yikes, we did Ray Liotta last week. And
yeah.
And here's one of the other big stars of Goodfellas.
Yeah, and he was very prolific.
Yeah, I know he did a million things, and yet I don't really know much other stuff that he did outside of Goodfellas. And I love Goodfellas. I've seen Goodfellas a zillion times. I know him from Rocketeer. He had a part in the Rocketeer movie as well. A little comic book connection.
Yeah, a lot of surprising people showed up in the Rocketeer.
It's a classic. But man, as Paulie, as the head of that mob family, mm-hmm, in Goodfellas, just perfect.
Yeah, a very iconic performance.
Sure. Slicing that garlic in prison, remember? Oh, just amazing. Paul Sorvino. Take a drink for Tony Dow.
Okay. Oh.
Tony Dow was 77.
It's Wally.
Wally Cleaver. Leave It to Beaver, people just kind of write it off as, sappy 50s, perfect family sitcom.
But it wasn't.
And what Leave It to Beaver gets right is how weird kids are.
Yes.
The kids would just say and do weird stuff on that show, which was accurate.
Yeah, weird and dumb stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it was sweet and cute and fine and all that, but at the same time, yeah, so strange and really, really funny. Tony Dow did not do a ton of acting outside Leave It to Beaver. He kind of got into other businesses later in life, as well as directing, did some directing later, and would come back to, he did the new Leave It to Beaver projects of the, mm-hmm, 80s, and would kind of, a lot of the acting he would do was kind of stunt casting, you know, like, hey, here's Wally Cleaver. I saw Tony and the Beaver, Jerry Mathers, Wally and Beaver together at a convention not long ago, just a few short years ago. So yeah, Tony was terrific, a really special show, and he was a very important part of, mm-hmm, it. He was fantastic as a older brother, Wally. Nicely done.
Absolutely.
Tony Dow. Pat Carroll was 95, probably best known to modern audiences as Ursula from The Little Mermaid.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But was one of those actors that was around for, you know, decades and popped up in all sorts of stuff. One of my favorite credits for Pat Carroll was Laverne and Shirley. She was Shirley's mother.
I love that connection.
So there's a fun credit.
Uh-huh. Does that mean Shirley was a poor, unfortunate soul before it was cool?
Yes. Yes. Most importantly for us, Pat Carroll was in Legends of the Superheroes. Pat Carroll was Hawkman's mother.
A very important character.
Legends Episode 2, The Roast. Yes, Hawkman's mother comes out and just does a bunch of jokes about being Hawkman's mother.
And then she steals Hawkman's voice.
That was her thing.
Yes.
Yeah, weird connection to part human, part animal characters.
Yeah. What was going on with Pat Carroll?
I don't know.
I think we're on to something. But having defended Legends of the Superheroes in classic sci-fi court, I was quite familiar with that name, Pat Carroll.
I never met her, but I'm taking a drink because I love The Little Mermaid.
And you know what, Cornflake? Keep drinking while you're at it. For Nichelle Nichols was 89.
Yeah.
There's Lieutenant Uhura.
Everybody loved her. I mean, I was never a Star Trek fan, but I loved her.
You can't not.
And in addition to her acting, you know, she was an activist and she worked with NASA to encourage women and minorities to get into science work.
That's very cool. I'm all for more women and people of color in STEM.
Yeah, you know, and there's the famous stories, the Martin Luther King story. You know, Martin Luther King, she was planning to leave Star Trek and Martin Luther King asked her not to, how important it was mm-hmm. that she was there. I saw her tell all those stories on more than one occasion at conventions. She was a wonderful guest and speaker and singer at conventions.
Yeah.
She would break into song. If you went to a Nichelle Nichols Q&A, she was known to just start singing sometimes and sang beautifully. You know, in addition to mm-hmm. an actor, she was a singer and a model before Star Trek. I did have the pleasure of meeting her very briefly once, and yeah, she was just fantastic. We all love her. You said it, Nichelle, mm-hmm. Nichelle Nichols. I named a character after her in one of my stories for one of our ESO Network books.
Yes, it's very sweet.
That is Nichelle, of course. Hey, take another drink for Bill Russell. Was 88. We had somebody from the Boston Celtics, Coach Bill Fitch, last week. This is Bill Russell, who was a player for the Celtics as well as a coach. And Bill, considered one of the greatest players in the history of basketball. He won 11 championships with the Boston Celtics.
Wow.
Which is a record. Nobody else can say that. I did see Bill in person once, and I was not going to Celtics games when he was playing. That was before my time. But in the 80s, he was a coach, mm-hmm. not for the Celtics, but I went to a Celtics versus the Sacramento Kings game once back in the 80s, and Bill was coaching Sacramento at that time. And I remember Bill and Celtics coach Casey Jones, they were teammates back in the 60s. I remember seeing the two of them meet and hug before the game.
Aww.
Which was nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, Bill Russell was, he was around back in the 70s and 80s. He was in On the Right Track, the Gary Coleman movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a credit I didn't know.
Can you imagine the range if you've got Gary Coleman standing next to a 6'10" Bill Russell?
Yeah.
That's quite the contrast.
And he even he hosted Saturday Night Live in 1979, I believe. Busy guy back then. One of the greats.
It sounds like it.
Bill Russell. Susan Nair was 63, and she's on this list, not a super well-known actress, but she had one very important role. She was the original Joni Cunningham.
Oh,
really? I did not know there was such a thing.
Pre-Erin Moran. Well, Happy Days started as a pilot, which they showed on Love American Style.
Oh, of course. I forgot about all those weird pilots and spin-offs and backdoor pilots. And
the pilot version had a slightly different cast. They had Ron Howard, they had Anson Williams, they had Marion Ross. Everybody else different. There was no Fonz at all. So, like, there wasn't like a different guy playing the Fonz.
That's weird to think about.
Yeah.
Fonz was not even a character on it, but there was a Joni Cunningham, and it was this lady, Susan. So when they went to series, of course, then along comes Erin Moran. But that's an important part for yes. for the likes of us.
Where it all sure. began with Happy Days.
There's your original Joni. How about Olivia Newton-John was 73?
Oh, yeah, that was a hard one for me.
Yeah, just broke all our hearts that day. I know how you feel about Xanadu.
And before that, you know, I was a big fan of Grease as well.
Right, so, right.
Yeah, as an adult, But the one I've held on to is Xanadu.
I will always wish I was cast as Sandy in the School Musical when I got cast as one of the guys instead, because there weren't enough guys who wanted to be part of the School Musical.
Oh, no. They were casting girls as guys just due to a lack of interest?
Yeah, I was Pootsie or Kanicki or something like that.
Oh. I'm certainly a fan of many of Olivia's songs. She had quite a string of hit songs through the 70s and 80s. Started with the country stuff, oddly. You know, for an Australian, her early hits were country songs. But once she got a little poppier, then I was on board. I mean, Physical was the biggest hit of...
That's a terrible song.
But everybody knew it.
Yeah. It was the biggest hit of 1982.
Yep.
Yeah, probably not Olivia's best. I like some of her songs better. Magic is a cool song. Yeah. Twist of Fate is cool.
Yeah.
Bunch of good stuff.
Yeah.
Physical was the big one. Not the best, but certainly the biggest. And yeah, when we went to the Juliana Hatfield show and Juliana put out her Olivia Newton-John tribute record a few years ago, we went to the album release show. And when they played Physical, that was a moment. The room was just, the room kind of exploded. So,
and you could tell the band was having so much fun.
As goofy a song as it is, the live Juliana version, everybody was like, oh yeah, this is pretty fun, actually. All starting with Olivia Newton-John.
Well, that's good, because if somebody can hear your body talk in any other circumstance, you'd want them to leave the room.
Yeah.
It's an awfully creepy, weird song if you really start paying attention.
It is.
Let's move on. Cornflake, you may need to take the lead here and tell us about Morgan Taylor, who was only 52.
Morgan Taylor was the mind behind Gustopher Yellow Gold, which was a sci-fi world for kids all set to music. You'd never know that his biggest influences were Kiss and David Bowie, but it was that pairing of music with magic that ultimately inspired him to just come up with this whole universe about a guy from the sun who decided it was too hot to live there, came to Earth, lived with an eel who liked to hang out in socks, and made a bunch of these just beautiful but also absurd good pop songs. Like, the music that he created was dubbed Kindy rock, so indie rock for kids, but he wanted the music to have a rock sensibility, like something that the adults who might take kids to go see a Gustopher Yellow Gold show, like, not cringe at the music. You'd never know from seeing him, which I did, so everyone can take a drink.
I remember you telling us about Morgan and his work a year or so back.
Yeah, it was a random find for me. I just wandered into the Cabot Theater one day, interested in the fact that there was a concert going on at 10 o'clock in the morning instead of, what, 8 o'clock at night to see. But his wife, Rachel, intends to find a way to keep the music and the story of Gustopher Yellow Gold going.
All right. Louise Fletcher was 88 and best known as Nurse Ratchet from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Speaking of Jack Nicholson, as we were earlier, that was her her big, I believe, Oscar-winning role. And she was great in that. I've not seen that movie in a long time. And she's popped up in lots of other stuff over the years as well. But Cornflake, I wanted to point this out to you. I saw on her list of credits, Louise was in The Boy Who Could Fly.
Yes.
As Dr. Granader.
Yeah, not a big part.
It was a small but crucial part, I assume. Was it crucial?
Let's say yes.
There
absolutely.
You go.
And she stole the show.
Yeah, she did. Louise Fletcher.
But don't tell Jay Underwood I said that.
You got it. Coolio. Rapper Coolio was 59.
Yeah.
With the cool hair.
I remember the hair as parodied by Weird Al on the Bad Hair Day album cover. And I just know the one Coolio song, also parodied by Weird Al.
I think I know other Coolio songs because I was listening to hip hop when Coolio was current.
Yeah, I'm the one Coolio song that Weird Al parodied was also drew from Stevie Wonder, right?
Yeah, that was based on a Stevie Wonder song. Yeah. That's right.
Yes.
So it's all a big tapestry. I don't know why I got weird about that.
That's fine. What else is there to say?
Yeah.
It was Coolio. Sticking in the world of music, Loretta Lynn. Loretta Lynn was 90.
You thought she'd be around forever.
Sure. I remember when the movie came out, Coal Miner's Daughter, although
I saw that movie so many times.
Oh, good, because I never saw it.
Yeah, I've never been interested in country music, but I remember seeing Loretta Lynn on Muppet Show.
Yeah, I feel like she'd pop up on TV.
Sure.
Back in the early 80s as well. Did she do any Solid Gold, perhaps?
Don't know. I mean, Crystal Gayle was her daughter.
Oh, yeah. Crystal Gayle was on Solid Gold every other week.
Yeah, I think she had the Solid Gold generation in hand.
Yeah, I feel like maybe Loretta would pop up once in a while as well. Mm. Or maybe they'd get her like on the Barbara Mandrell show or something.
That sounds well.
Yes. So, yeah, she was around and certainly a legend in the world of country music about which we know very little. But that is Loretta Lynn. I think it's time to drink again. And this is on Cornflake because this is a woman that I never saw live, but I believe you did, Cornflake. Judy Tenuta.
Oh, I sure did.
Was 72. At MarsCon, right?
Yes, she was a guest of honor at MarsCon a few years ago.
I remember. What a fantastic guest of honor. Our buddy, the great Luke Ski, who organizes the funny music track for MarsCon.
I had heard her name a lot of times from her stand-up, but I had no idea what I was in for when I saw her live at MarsCon. And gotta tell you, came this close to being hitched by Judy Tenuta.
She was about to marry you off?
Yes, she would do this at her live shows. She would offer to marry people in the religion of Judaism. And she asked if anyone in the audience wanted to get married as part of the show. And it ended up that our friends Kyle and Lindsay from the world of Mighty Magisaurs got their vows renewed instead. But I was very, very close to being married by Judy Tenuta, and I think I would have loved it because she was hysterical, wife of Emo Phillips for a while. And though they would joke about each other on stage after they got divorced, I hear they remained friends.
Yeah, I remember Judy was part of that 80s stand-up comedy scene, which included a lot of odd characters, such as Judy and certainly Emo.
And you gotta love that she carried that little accordion along with her.
Certainly a distinctive voice in comedy, and I never saw her live. I'm so glad that you did, and I'm so glad all our friends at MarsCon got to spend the weekend goofing around with Judy. A buddy of Weird Al, too, I believe, right? She popped up on the Weird Al show.
Yes, that she did. And she got to be a voice on the cartoon Mighty Magiswords, and she loved it.
Yes.
She's always asking if she could come back.
Part of our little circle of weird people, as it turns out, I like to think. Judy Tenuta, of course. How about Angela Lansbury was 96.
Wow. Murder, She Wrote, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I never saw Murder, She Wrote.
It was my grandmother's favorite show, so I was subjected to it.
I guess I saw her in Bedknobs and Broomsticks, which she did when she was quite a bit younger.
Yeah, I was thinking of those kind of Disney movies. And then, of course, the animated stuff, right?
Yes, yeah.
What was she, the coffee pot, the teapot?
Yes, the teapot in Beauty and the Beast.
That is Angela. Ron Masak was 86. This is kind of a weird one, but a couple of big credits for us. He was an actor, and not a major actor, I suppose, but for our purposes, he was on an episode of Land of the Lost, the one where an astronaut crash-landed into the Land of the Lost. Remember, like, he was hanging in a tree from a parachute?
Yes,
that guy. Familiar. Yes. And also, I know we've spoken of the early 80s Saturday morning cartoon Meatballs and Spaghetti.
Yes.
About a rock band. He was Meatballs.
Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
That's good. Good to know.
Well, if you're going to be one or the other, I'd be Meatballs too.
Yeah, Spaghetti was like the cute blonde girl. Ron Masak was Meatballs. We were speaking of Rankin Bass earlier and circling back to Rankin Bass because Jules Bass was 87. So Arthur Rankin died, a few years ago, I feel like, 8-10 years ago, I think. And here's Jules, partner in Rankin Bass. And as previously mentioned, we're sort of obsessed with Rankin Bass around here.
Yeah, you can't escape that fact.
Here's one of the guys. And he kind of led a very private life, I feel like, in his later years. He didn't do a lot of appearances or interviews or on-camera stuff. But man, yeah, he directed so much of the Rankin Bass work. You know, he was the director of Frosty, of Year Without a Santa Claus, Rudolph Shiny New Year, the Lord of the Rings stuff, The Hobbit, and Return of the King, Last Unicorn.
Oh, Last Unicorn, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, plus lots more. And also, in addition to being the producer and the director, he was the lyricist. He wrote a lot of the song lyrics for all those classic songs in the Rankin Bass cartoons. Maury Laws was the composer doing the music. Jules Bass wrote a lot of those classic songs, the lyrics.
Yeah, well, you know, lots of great songs in those specials.
I never met him, but I'm taking a drink for The Last Unicorn.
Go right ahead for Jules Bass, of course. Jerry Lee Lewis was 87 and a problematic dude, kind of a monster.
Yeah.
But it's Jerry Lee Lewis. I felt like we couldn't let this one slide without acknowledging Jerry Lee Lewis on the list. I believe he was the last surviving member of the inaugural class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the first class from 1986. That'll do it. He was the last guy. And certainly very important to the early days of rock and roll, of course, and the classic songs, Great Balls of Fire, and a whole lot of shaking going on. And then just kind of self-destructed as far as his career when his pretty shocking, horrifying personal life came to light.
Yeah.
And never really recovered in the world of rock and pop music from his early scandals. And kind of made more of a career in country music after that. Mm-hmm. They'll take you into the world of country music.
Yeah,
I wasn't going to say it, but
all is forgiven in the world of country, evidently.
You don't need to say it. Everybody is thinking it. It's okay.
But yikes, he never stopped having scandals and controversies and problematic incidents throughout his entire long life. A very troubled, weird life, but an important guy from the early days of rock. That was the killer Jerry Lee Lewis. Kevin O'Neill was 69, and this is a comic book artist, a British comic artist who did a bunch of stuff that I was familiar with back in England. He did Nemesis the Warlock, and you know, it's part of that like Judge Dredd kind of scene, 2000 AD stuff from the 80s. But his big credit, though, that I know the mayor you're familiar with, is Kevin O'Neill was the artist who worked with Alan Moore on The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, sure.
And what a distinct drawing style he had. So special, so unusual, kind of a quirky, sort of disturbing look. He was great, a very precise illustrator who really had his own look, just perfect on League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Mm-hmm. So one of the classic works in modern comics. That was Kevin O'Neill. And we're moving right on to another Kevin and a big one for us. And take a drink, because I saw this guy in person a time or two. Kevin Conroy.
Beloved as the longtime voice of animated Batman.
The best voice of Batman. Yeah. The best Batman ever, I think, is almost universally agreed upon. Everybody kind of agrees that, you know, live action, cartoons, whatever, Kevin Conroy was the best. He was only 66, but started doing Batman back in 92, Batman the Animated Series, and would continue to voice Batman in one project or another ever since. Mm-hmm. You know, even after that initial Batman and Batman Beyond and the Justice League Unlimited, he was Batman through all of that, but then they kept bringing him back whenever they could. And even he got to do live-action Batman, which was super fun. When they did the big Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover
for
event.
For all the CW shows.
Yeah, all the Arrow and Flash and Supergirl and Legends and all those shows. They did the big giant Crisis crossover, and they did an older Batman character, very much based on the Kingdom Come comic book series, this version of Batman. But we got to see Kevin playing Batman in live action, which was really special just a couple of years ago.
I loved it. Was that animated series that really made a Batman fan out of me?
Oh, yeah. That was Kevin Gallagher was 76.
A major influence on a young cornflake once upon a time.
I've noticed how angry you get around fruit, cornflake. That was the influence this guy had on you?
Yeah.
Earth fruit.
I mean, Gallagher kind of turned into a punchline eventually, and mm-hmm. the punchline of an uncool hack comic, you could dismiss Gallagher. And perhaps not completely without merit to make that point. But that said, Gallagher was wildly successful.
And iconic.
Wildly popular. And you cannot understate how big those comedy specials were that he made in the 80s, which ran on cable TV, and also just the VHS. Like, they would rent mm-hmm. out, you go into a video store, those Gallagher tapes were flying off the shelves back in the 80s. People loved them and rented them again and again and again.
That's legendomatic. He never got tired of it.
I mean, he franchised the act to his brother.
That's the craziest part.
At one point, there was a Gallagher 2. Gallagher's brother started performing as Gallagher 2. And I don't think he is anymore. I think that eventually fizzled out.
Yeah. Well, it fizzled. There were some legal problems.
Oh, yeah. They were battling each other in court. The whole thing got pretty ridiculous. Weird thing about Gallagher is that our friend Matt, Matt, friend of the Flopcast, longtime friend of mine, who was providing us with all those monster cereal reviews back in the fall. Mm-hmm. Matt has what I believe is a false memory of us, of Matt and I going to see Gallagher live in concert.
Huh. I don't think you would have done that.
I don't think it happened. I never saw Gallagher live. Matt insists that we did.
And you just blacked out.
So, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. One of us is wrong. Maybe I'm the one who's wrong. I don't think I am. I think I'm right. I don't think I ever went to a Gallagher show.
It wouldn't seem in character.
But I also love the idea that maybe I did and I just blocked it out mentally. Yeah, that would also be pretty fantastic. Either way.
You did not go of your own volition.
But remember the people, you'd see the audience in the Gallagher shows on those videos, and the people in the several first rows would all be wearing plastic sheets and ponchos and things. Yep. Like, they'd all be dressed up, wearing protective gear for when the watermelons started flying.
Yep.
But I don't think I ever had to suit up like that. But who knows? Take a drink for Jason David Frank, who was only 49. And this was a guy that was largely off my radar, but best known as one of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. A show I never saw.
Oh, the Green Ranger. I watched Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah, you were probably closer to the age range to enjoy the Power Rangers. I was aware of Jason David Frank, though, because he was a regular convention guest at many of our, nerd events. And in fact, back several years ago, he was scheduled to be at Boston Comic Con, and that was the year that Comic Con had to get canceled. And at the last minute, they were rescheduling the guests to appear at various comic book shops in the area. And Jason David Frank appeared at Rubber Chicken Comics, our favorite local comic book shop. And that's there's a Flopcast episode that we recorded at Rubber Chicken while Jason was there. We didn't talk to Jason David Frank, but he was standing 5 feet away from where we were recording the Flopcast. And we talked to Jay, who runs Rubber Chicken. And we talked to Panda, actually. Panda, the creator of the drink that I am drinking right now. The mastermind behind the Kevin cocktail that she provided me with a recipe for. Yeah, that was Panda was there in her rogue costume. And we talked to Panda that same day. And Jason David Frank was there. And he was a very popular guest at a lot of conventions over the years. A Power Ranger.
Go, go, Power Rangers.
Now moving on to one that this one hit me hard. Irene Cara.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Was only 63. I love Irene Cara.
Yes. Those solid hits she had.
We mentioned someone from the cast of the Fame TV show last week who played Reardon. But Irene was the original Coco in Fame the movie.
Yes.
She had the Fame theme as a hit song. And then, yeah, a couple of years later, Flashdance, What a Feeling from the movie Flashdance. What a pair of monster hits, you know? That's an amazing...
Timeless.
Yeah.
I still rock out to those songs when I hear them.
They're great. They're still classics. People still love both those songs. And I was thinking, it's weird for a singer to have two such monster hits and for me to say what I'm about to say, which is, I don't think Irene Cara had the career that she deserved to have.
Yeah.
She should have been bigger.
Yeah, I know that you've talked about the DC Cab song, which is also quite good.
Irene played herself in the ridiculous DC Cab movie and had a great song in that movie called The Dream, which was kind of a minor hit. And yeah, so she had a handful of other smaller hits here and there. She had a great kind of catchy poppy song called Why Me. Mm-hmm. She has her breakdance song. Oh, yeah. there's like a silly breakdance song that she made, which I love, you know, in addition to Fame and Flashdance, of course.
But you're 100% right, Kevin. If Meatloaf could have a comeback, why didn't we not get an Irene Cara?
Well, yeah, when you consider the talent that she had, what a voice. And she did a bit of acting as well. You know, Fame was her big movie role, of course, but she was in some movies after that. She was an actor. And even pre-Fame, I mean, she was working as a kid, and especially the Electric Company.
Yes.
I forgot she was on
that. Back in the 70s, it was Short Circus was the little kind of ensemble troupe of kid singers on Electric Company. She was a young teenager, I guess. You know, she was very young. You go back and watch Electric Company now, you're just looking for Irene. There she is. Yeah, it's fun spotting Irene, young Irene Cara in Short Circus. I went down this Irene Cara rabbit hole after she died on YouTube. I was watching, she was on, right after Fame came out, she was on David Letterman's show, not his late night show. She was on the morning show that he had before late night. And she, you know, sang a couple of songs and did an interview, which you can see on YouTube. I watched her on Solid Gold. And she had a sitcom pilot as well, which you can also see on.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. There was a pilot for a sitcom. I believe it was just called Irene. And the premise was she was a waitress at a like kind of cabaret place where the waiters and waitresses would also perform on stage.
Now that could, why wasn't that picked up?
Yeah, it was a clever idea because, you know, then she could suddenly break into song right in the middle of the show. So, you know,
yeah, it's the perfect setup for that.
Yeah, you got Irene Cara there. All right, you know, break out a song once in a while. It's a bizarre show. Also in the cast, Julia Duffy from Newhart. This was just, you know, a year or two pre-Newhart. She was Irene's roommate, I think. And then also working at the cabaret was Michael Winslow, the goofy sound effects guy from the Police Academy movies.
Of course.
Yeah, neat. And he was like doing goofy sound effects and jokes and stuff on stage at this cabaret. So yeah, go on YouTube. You can watch a lot of weird Irene Cara videos. And you should. Yikes, we loved Irene Cara. Another singer who was much loved, Christine McVie, was 79.
Yeah, this one.
Fleetwood Mac keyboardist Christine McVie.
Yeah, what a beautiful voice she had. She kind of gets, I mean, she gets eclipsed a little bit by Stevie Nicks, but...
Sure. How could you not be overshadowed when Stevie Nicks is also in your band?
Yeah.
No shortage of attention-grabbing lead singers in Fleetwood Mac. They had at least three at a time in that band over the years. But Christine McVie did a lot of writing and lead singing. She was a very important member of Fleetwood Mac.
And the songs where she led the vocals were always my favorite Fleetwood Mac songs.
Yeah, I like a lot. I like Tell Me Lies a lot, especially.
Yeah, Little Lies, Everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I liked her solo hit as well in the mid-80s. She had Got a Hold on Me.
Yes.
Oh, loved that.
Her solo song. Yeah, she was fantastic.
So good.
We also have to note here on the Flapcast that before she was in Fleetwood Mac, she was in a blues band in England called Chicken Shack.
Oh, wow. Last week we had Atomic Rooster, a prog rock band.
The drummer from Spinal Tap was originally in a band called Atomic Rooster. Christine McVie was in Chicken Shack.
Wow.
What's going on in England?
I don't know. They love their chickens, I guess.
Yes, they do. And you know what? So do we. George Newall was 88. This was one of the creators of Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh. Yeah, we lost Bob Dureau a few years ago.
Yeah. Oh, man. There's hardly anybody left from the early days of Schoolhouse Rock. But this was an advertising guy, and he was one of the guys in on the ground floor of conceiving of Schoolhouse Rock. Co-wrote the book that came out in the 90s about Schoolhouse Rock with all the lyrics and information. Yeah. So, yeah, that was George. And, man, we love Schoolhouse Rock. Ursula Hayden. Here's another tie to last week's Flapcast. Last week, we talked about Matilda the Hun, who was one of the original gorgeous ladies of wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I mentioned that I watched a wrestling match between Matilda the Hun and the farmer's daughter. Well, Ursula Hayden was 56. She was Babe the farmer's daughter.
Oh,
wow. Glow, the gorgeous ladies of wrestling. Huh. Yeah, I remember watching The Farmer's Daughter back in the 80s. And that was like her gimmick was she was like Daisy Duke. You know, she'd come out in the little tiny cutoff shorts and the cutoff shirts and such. And she stayed very much involved in Glow. She actually bought the rights to Glow in 2001. So she was involved in producing Glow reunions and the Glow documentary. And then, you know, so she was involved in the eventual Netflix series as well. Yeah.
Oh,
so
great.
She made that her life's work. The gorgeous ladies of wrestling. That was the farmer's daughter, Ursula Hayden. Take a drink for Bob McGrath from Sesame Street.
Oh, no, another Sesame Street.
Man, that's right. We did Luis Emilio Delgado last week, and Bob McGrath was 90. One of the original cast members of Sesame Street. Bob was on Sesame Street from 1969, when the show started, through 2016.
That's amazing.
My goodness.
That's quite a run.
Yeah.
And yeah, when Dragon Con had their big Sesame Street reunion a few years back, Emilio, who played Luis, was there, as well as Gordon was there. Carol Spinney, who played Big Bird, was there, and Bob was there. The four of them together.
What a troop.
Everybody loved seeing Bob there. And Bob was a singer. That guy could really sing. Like even pre-Sesame Street, he was a professional singer.
I've heard a few of his albums. He's quite good.
I mean, handsome guy too. I bet he could have done a lot of different things with his talent.
Well, he chose to hang around with puppets.
Yeah, why not?
And you know, good call.
Good call.
Because yes. I can't imagine Sesame Street without him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We all grew up with Bob. Take another drink while you're at it for Kirstie Alley, was 71.
You met her?
I never met her, but yeah, I saw Kirstie in person. I saw the whole cast of Cheers in person.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, we've mentioned that on the Flopcast before. When Cheers did their 200th episode, they did a big event in Boston, which I went to because I was living in Boston and I had nothing to do. So I was like, yeah, I'll go stare at the cast of Cheers. And yeah, Kirstie was there. She was very, very funny, very cool. And what a smooth transition, like losing Shelley Long on Cheers. You've got to bring in a new leading lady to spar with Ted Danson. And a credit to both the producers of Cheers, who just did, you know, remarkable casting every step of the way on that show. Mm. And then also a credit to Kirstie that she could come in and just hit the ground running and they didn't miss a step. And she was fantastic as Rebecca on Cheers.
Yeah, and the show continued to be successful.
Oh, sure. They were bigger than ever.
And of course, I loved her in Look Who's Talking.
Yes, you watched the Talking Baby movies.
Yes, I did.
So I didn't have to.
I'm afraid I did too.
That's right.
The first one, anyway.
I absolutely avoided those movies. Did you watch any Veronica's Closet?
No.
I don't think I ever saw that either, but that was another. She did a bunch of TV series post Cheers and Married to a Hardy Boy.
They divorced quite some time ago, but
yeah, but still,
yes, she was married to Parker Stevenson.
Oh, that was Kirstie. Helen Slayton Hughes was 92. I put Helen on the list because we are big fans of Parks and Recreation.
Mm-hmm.
Helen was Pawnee stenographer Ethel Beavers.
Yes, I know. I remember her. I remember the name well, and of course, since my mom is a stenographer, stenographers always stand out to me.
A screamingly funny, outrageous old lady, yes. Ethel Beavers. In Pawnee. Yeah, very, very funny. That was Helen Slayton Hughes. From the world of soccer, how about Pele?
Yeah. Pele passed away.
Yes. Know very little about him and very little about professional soccer, but...
I mean, how many professional soccer players can I name? One.
One.
And that one is Pele, yeah.
Unless I'm allowed to start naming Ted Lasso characters.
Well, that would be hysterical, but... Wrong.
Only name I can give you is Pele. And yeah, Pele was, like, we started hearing that name in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think from the first time I started hearing about soccer, I was hearing about Pele. And it was like, oh yeah, it's this big international sport. And here's the top guy is Pele. And for some reason, even though soccer never really caught on, professional soccer never really caught on in America. And yet...
We knew who Pele was.
Everybody knew Pele. I guess it was just such a great name. People just like saying Pele.
Mm-hmm. Also, he was phenomenal.
Oh, I'm sure he was. I mean, I never saw him play. I don't know anything about him or his career, but I know that's the top guy in soccer. And the most impressive thing about Pele for me is that the Atari 2600, when they did their soccer game, the cartridge mm-hmm. for Atari Soccer, it was called Pele's Soccer. They put his name on the soccer game for Atari.
Because you can tell by looking at those graphics.
See those three square blocks in the middle of the screen? That's Pele. That's professional soccer star Pele. Yeah. Yeah, probably not a photorealistic image of Pele on your TV screen when you hooked up the Atari. But as far as, unless I'm forgetting something, like as far as I can recall, that's the only case of a real person being named in the title of an Atari cartridge.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's impressive.
Yeah, that's something you see more with Nintendo games.
I was going to say, it became more of a thing later on.
Yeah, yeah, in later video games, there must be a million examples. But from the original Atari, it's possible I'm forgetting something, but that might be it. So for me, that's his most important accomplishment. He was an Atari cartridge. So nicely done. Pele. Barbara Walters was 93.
She's the reason we do this show the way we do.
Is she? I didn't even realize. Has this been all influenced?
Well, because she died late in December.
Oh, no. Okay. No, I thought you meant like she somehow inspired the whole format of the Flopcast.
No.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I didn't know where you were going with that.
You mean these specific memorial shows. Okay. Yes, Barbara did die very late in the year. It was December 30th. And yes, Cornflake is correct. That's the reason we wait till January to do our memorial shows.
We also derived the show's entire philosophy from Barbara.
Yeah, you can tell our interviewing skills clearly inspired by Barbara Walters. Mm. Remember Kevin Nealon doing Bob Walters on SNL?
I don't. I remember Baba Wawa.
Oh, yeah, going way back. But yeah, in the 80s, Kevin Nealon did Bob Walters, and he would interview people and just try to make them cry. Oh. His whole questioning strategy was just trying to get people to cry. And then as soon as he got them to break down in tears, he'd turn towards the camera with this goofy smile, like a mission accomplished.
Yeah, I can picture that.
Eventually, he just took out an onion and just started carving a raw onion in front of them. I don't think Barbara ever had to go to those lengths, but Kevin Nealon did. And now that I realize that the Flapcast is entirely based on Barbara Walters, we're going to make some changes around here.
Oh, good.
Do you need me to cry more often?
Yes. There's going to be a lot of open weeping on the Flapcast starting next week. Watch for that.
Well, finally, this is the change I've always hoped for.
It's coming. That starts now. One more name. We're at the end of the list. And yeah, as Cornflake said, the reason we wait till January to do this, New Year's Eve, we lost a big one for the likes of us. Anita Pointer.
That's right.
Was 74. Of the Pointer Sisters, of course. We love the Pointer Sisters. Anita, one of those Pointer Sisters, of course. And sang lead on several of their biggest hit songs. She was the lead singer on I'm So Excited, on Fire, wow. On Slow Hand. Cornflake, your favorite, oh. Slow Hand?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was her favorite.
I can't believe they were allowed to play that song on the radio. Those Pointers, awfully naughty. We're down to one Pointer Sister.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Ruth.
Oh, we need to protect her.
Our last Pointer.
Yeah, which I believe my friend Liz used to know Ruth Pointer. Liz used to work at a coffee shop where Ruth was a regular customer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, here in Massachusetts some years back. But yeah, Ruth is still around and still, I believe, occasionally performs as the Pointer Sisters with her daughter and with her granddaughter.
Oh, wow. Three generations of Pointers.
Yeah, imagine that.
That's kind of cool.
It is cool. They were cool. Pointer Sisters were great. We are certainly Pointer Sister fans around here. Going back to Sesame Street with Bob and Luis.
Yes, Sesame Street connection.
We could all watch that pinball cartoon and count to 12 with the Pointer Sisters. We are big fans around here. We should all do the Neutron dance right now.
Okay, I'm doing it.
I'm just going to take your word for it. Well, that's the end of the list. We did it.
Ah, we made it.
Made it once again. I'm afraid I've already started the list for next year.
Oh, no.
But for now, let's wrap up the Memorial Show. Cornflake, please get us out of here.
Between shows, you can find us at flopcast.net. On Facebook, facebook.com/flopcast specifically. We're on Mastodon, universodon.com/@flopcast. And we're on Instagram, the_flopcast. If you head over to Apple Podcasts, you can leave us a rating and or a review. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Sponge Awareness never did a neutron dance in their lives.
But they wanted to.
We just were not cool enough to neutron dance. That's why we needed the Pointers. Cornflake Mayer, thanks for joining me for our annual memorial shows. Everybody, thanks for hanging out with us, of course. We're going to lighten things up starting next week and through the rest of the year. We're going to get silly again. So, of course, be safe, be kind, and be silly right along with us. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and Pointers.
Bye-bye.
Do you like podcasts?
Then you're gonna hate Thunder Talk.
Tasteless subject matter.
Mature humor.
Contempt for our co-hosts.
Unapologetic social views.
Edgy music.
And total irreverence for the nerd junk we love.
Are all reasons why
no one.
No one.
No one should listen to Thunder Talk.
Find us on the ESO Network.
And all podcasting platforms.
Or don't.
Whatever.
Okay, it's the secret after show. Real quick, because we've been so busy with the memorial shows, we never mentioned that we have a convention coming up next week as this show comes out. So only the secret people are going to hear our panel schedule for Aresia. Aresia is a Boston's science fiction, fantasy, whatever convention, which happens Martin Luther King weekend, middle of January, middle of Boston. We will be there. I'm just doing a couple of panels this year, and I believe the mayor of Chickentown, you've got a panel as well. We're going to run through our panel schedule real quick. So if you're going to be at Aresia in Boston, you can find us there. Mayor of Chickentown, you are doing a panel at Aresia, I believe. When and what is yours?
I am going to be on a panel on Saturday, January 14th at 4 o'clock, and it's on fandom after 50. So kind of some old, you know, fans who've been around for a while kind of talking about what changes they've seen in the fan community.
Complaining about the kids.
Complaining about the kids and tell them to get off our lawn.
Well, that'll be fun.
Sure.
I'm doing one not long after that. So Saturday night, Saturday, January 14th, 7 p.m., I am moderating a panel called Graphic Novels as Memoir. So kind of, you know, autobiographical comic books, essentially, shall be the subject. Join us for that. And then my other panel is on Monday, Martin Luther King Day, Monday, January 16th, also comic book themed. I'm moderating a panel called Image Comics at 30. So going through the history of the comic book publisher Image Comics and what they're up to today, that kind of thing. So that'll be fun. Join us if you can. I know our buddy Kevin Cafferty has a couple of panels scheduled as well, so a few of us will be lurking about. It'll be freezing cold and extra nerdy. See you there.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.